a job, Jen?
But probably not the one you're expecting.
Welcome back to Pieces of Eight, the podcast that's there as a good man goes to war, or not, as the case may be with this incarnation. Maybe it should be called A Good Granddaughter Goes to War.
Each week we look at a different aspect of the Doctor Who universe that features the incarnation of the Time Lord, as played by Paul McGann. I'm Rebecca Chapman.
And I'm Kenny Smith, and you join us as we continue our quest to feature the Eighth Doctor's exploits, whether on screen in books, novellas, broadcast audios, short stories, comics, animations, talking books, or indeed, anything else.
This week, we're back in the land of the Big Finish short trips as we explore what happened when the Eighth Doctor tries to stop his granddaughter from becoming involved in the Time War.
That's right, because we are discussing the Big Finish short trip, All Hands on Deck. I don't think Ant will mind too much, since he's newly married. Now, Becca, I know around this time last year, you discovered the very first season of Doctor Who on BritBox, and I think you pretty much binged that over the course of a week, so you were having a bit of trouble sleeping and you were awake through the night.
Yes, I did. I thoroughly enjoyed it, though.
It must have been quite interesting for you, particularly, you know, getting to realise that, you know, this is the show, how it started, here's the early years, completely different structure, the way stories are told, the way they're presented, the look of it, and the fact that the Doctor even had a granddaughter. So that must have been a bit of a surprise for someone who was used to Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant and Matt Smith initially.
Yes. I mean, I didn't know that the Doctor had a granddaughter. Clearly, later on with the Doctor's daughter, I presumed that the Doctor had a daughter, obviously. I say presumed. I knew that the Doctor had a daughter. But no, I was not aware of the granddaughter thing and was very, very confused when she started calling him grandfather.
Yeah, I can imagine, because it's, I mean, given that the Doctor has a picture of her and River on his desk when we get to the 12th Doctor in the pilot, and he's got the job at university, so he's got pictures of them in his desk and a selection of his old sonic screwdrivers. But beyond that, it's not really something that has been touched upon. I think there's been hints of it, but never actually directly mentioned.
No, I still really want a pen pot that's just filled with, like, all of the Doctor's different sonics. I feel like that would be really cool.
Yeah, I could do that. I've got loads of sonics. Sorry, I don't have any spares.
No, you're fine. Hang on, we've been approached by Merlin.
Oh, hello, Merlin. That's Becca's cat listeners. He's coming to join the fun. He doesn't like to be left out.
No, he's very fluffy.
Especially his tail.
I know, he's got such a fluffy tail. Anyway.
Exactly.
So obviously when I did my Eighth Doctor listen through, I heard a few with Susan and McGann.
Yes.
Including Relative Dimensions. Fantastic Christmas episode, by the way. And I love Alex. I think he's great. But I presume there are more of Susan.
There have been plenty of adventures with Susan in the Companion Chronicles and early adventures, as we've had stories pretty much set during her travels with the First Doctor, Ian and Barbara, but not too many encounters with the older Susan. She did come back in the Five Doctors, of course, where she met the first five, or she met four of the first five Doctors, as Tom Baker was not involved. And we did see her back on screen then, but here, this was quite a fascinating insight into her life, because this picks up after the events of To the Death, when Alex is killed. Spoilers. Oh, should have said that. In the Eighth Doctor Adventures, when we lose Lucy Miller too. Spoilers again. And this is set years after those events. So by this point, the Time War has started. And here we have the Eighth Doctor trying to prevent Susan getting involved in the Time War. In fact, why don't we have a wee excerpt from the story, just have a quick listen to hear what's going on right at the start as Susan is settling into her new flat in the old Coal Hill School.
Doctor Who, short trips.
After everything, I ended up back at Coal Hill School. It hadn't been a school for a long time. They converted it into flats over 100 years ago. The building had more or less survived the first Dalek invasion, but there was so much work to do to get it habitable again, nobody got round to it before the second invasion hit. It had just been reopened, when I was looking for a new place, somewhere smaller. I didn't need the space anymore. I could hardly say no when I realized it was available. It had always been a lovely old building, and now the playground had been torn up and a garden planted there. And in the quad, in the middle of the school, years and years ago, someone had planted an oak tree in memory of Ian and Barbara. It didn't say when they died. The plaque had obviously been replaced more than once, but the tree was a huge, gnarled and knotted thing. They'd had to cut it back when they renovated the place, as it had grown through several of the windows and caused a lot of damage. But I'm glad they didn't cut it down.
So, we've got the setup. We've heard a little bit, so why don't we meet two of the people behind this short trip?
Yes, hello, I'm Ian Atkins, and I was the producer of the short trip All Hands on Deck.
Ian, welcome back to Pieces of Eighth. Thankfully, hello. You survived the trauma of dealing with Kenny on his own last time.
Kenny and I have spoken a lot, so it was fine. I've got a legal thing to keep him away from me.
Oh, good. But today we're going to be talking about All Hands on Deck.
Indeed we are. Good job we've got Zoom, so your restraining order's still in place, Ian. This is something that's a little bit unusual, as we've got a short trip that actually grew into something that was perhaps far more than you, the listeners, or even Big Finish themselves probably expected. But let's wind back time a little bit, and you could maybe tell us a wee bit about the genesis of your idea for what became All Hands on Deck, please.
Absolutely. I think this came about when I'd got the go-ahead for a second run of short trips. And I'd been given a year, and I actually then went back to Jason and said, look, could we actually do 2 years? Because the planning is a lot, there's more to do, but it's actually a lot easier and you can space the stories around even if you record two with people. And they said, yeah, fine. And so with that in mind, we started looking at whether we could do slightly more special ideas. And I mean, the releases should always stand on their own. You shouldn't have to have heard anything else by Big Finish, but there was the potential to play with them a little bit, make them a bit more significant. And I'd always felt that there's a kind of pecking order with the releases at Big Finish. And there's the huge, great kind of high octane releases like the Time War and the War Doctor and things like that. And then you've had the main range and stuff. But the smaller ranges tend to get overlooked, or they're the ones that someone throws in their basket to get over £50 and things like that. And I felt, especially with the short trips, that although the stories were always good, because I don't think Big Finish ever willingly releases a bad story, they were fine, they were good stories, that was it, but they were competing against much bigger things, and they were generally going missed a lot of the time, which I think for a start, if you're producing, you don't want your work to not be heard. And also, on behalf of the people involved, like Lisa directing, or the writer, or quite often the sound design, you want them to be heard, because they've done really good work. So I looked at whether we could sort of open things up a bit, make them a bit more interesting, move into eras with Doctor Who that we'd not done before. So we started looking at new series and things like that. And so we were looking at the Jackie Tyler stories. We looked at the Jago and Lightfoot. And each of them tended, for some reason, that we were just thinking in terms of each time of two releases. And I think I've got a note for Time War on my list of things I'd like to do. I think the Nyssa one was the first one we actually worked out, because it was just a case of, it would be nice to have a companion just come across the Time War, which is happening at all times in all places. So frankly, all of them are going to encounter it, if you're being literal. And then I've always really loved the Eighth Doctor, and I've loved how Big Finish work with that. So things like To the Death still stay with me very much. And I'd already worked several times with Carol Ann Ford, and I just, the character of Susan is one of the really interesting ones from the early time. They've done some lovely stuff with her in The Eighth Doctor. So it was a case of, how would she fit the Time War? I think, to be honest with you, I just really went to Eddie and said, okay, Susan kind of getting called up for the Time War. And that was where we started with that.
What was it that led you to Eddie as a writer? Do you recall any specific things that you put in the briefs for him?
I think the first brief to Eddie Robson was quite, I try not to be the nightmare producer who goes to a writer and says, right, I want this, 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 but most of the time I did. But with Eddie, I was able to say, okay, it's set shortly after the sort of end of the Eighth Doctor stuff. Susan, call up Time War, go for it. And I don't think I even said about tone, because I think the tendency, when you get a pitch like that, would be to go really dark or really heavy. And two-thirds of it are quite a slapstick farce. And I remember reading his first storyline and thinking, this is exactly what I wouldn't have expected. And that's definitely a trigger for me with a short trip. If a pitch can do that to you, it'll do it to the reader as well. So it was sold from that. But I've always loved Eddie's work anyway, so I think I was fairly confident it was going to be good.
Did you have many changes along the way during the writing process? Did you have any particular memories or specific things you maybe said, okay, maybe not that, try this?
The only thing I think changed, and it was an add-on really, was that right at the end we'd got the scene where Susan is going off. And it just seemed to me that we were missing, well, in fact, I think I suggested to Eddie, I sort of said, would it be too obvious to have them talking through a doorway here and mirroring the conversation at the end of Dalek Invasion of Earth? And I couldn't work out whether it was a lovely idea or whether we were just ripping something off being cliche. And I've always looked with the short trips for emotional beats where you just know that the reader will really get into it, that the musician will be able to bring something out of it. And that just seemed really obvious to me. It was just a case of, well, you know, I don't care if some people say, oh, it's a bit obvious. And to be fair, no one seemed to. I tend to double guess myself and stuff like that. But no, I think that was the only thing that changed slightly, and Eddie really developed it. It's one of those things that's just one of my favourite moments in short trips. I think it's quite nice when you close a circle with some of the Doctor Who stuff. You're not allowed to do it very often either. And it was lovely to have the chance to do that. It's one of those things you think, oh God, I wish this had been on telly. It would be great.
By having the whole concept of the Time War available to you, did that open up storytelling possibilities that you maybe hadn't expected?
Sort of yes and no. I mean, Big Finish at the time was beginning to massively explore the Time War. So, and also with very big platform stories, whereas I think the short trips tend to be, by their necessity, quite a small scale. It's not to say that you can't be incredibly important in what you're doing, but it generally, it's something important happening to one person in the room rather than a whole planet. So it was a question really, it did open things up massively and it gave us a lot more sort of colours on the palette. But it was very important to me that it would still be an emotional heart, which I think should have been, definitely is at the heart of every short trip I saw. It was just a question of actually, it was nice to be able to mix and match a little differently. It wasn't Susan with a First Doctor story, wasn't Nyssa with Tegan and the Doctor and stuff like that. You could take these people in complete isolation. And to a degree, I think the short trips and maybe the Companion Chronicles are about the only Rangers that can really do that. So you kind of play to your strengths with it. And I think where we did that, I think it does work really well.
What do you recall of the studio recording for this one?
Not a huge amount, actually, which tends to be a good sign. You only remember the bad ones, if I'm honest. The good ones, I had enough good experiences in the studio that they do tend to blur a bit into one. But the bad ones, you tend to think, oh, God, that was awful. Carol Ann and Lisa get on incredibly well, which the second you get a sort of connection between the director and the reader, so much of the work is being done for you. They tend to get how to read a line because they're involved in it and invested in it. I haven't really got any sort of terrible story or hilarious story. It was just, and this sounds incredibly boring, but it was just very professionally done. We got through it very quickly. I wish I could say more about it. I'm sorry, but I mean, I've always really loved Carol Ann anyway, because I mean, for a start, the respect I have for someone who has been there the whole time. She's a great ambassador for Doctor Who. And she really invests in stuff that I'm sure she's got no idea what's going on. I mean, you know, Susan in the Time War, which aspects of that are going to mean anything to her now? But she prepared the script, she came in, a few notes, a few questions, and away she went. Yeah, it was definitely one of the easy ones at that point.
So when did you realise that perhaps there just might be a little bit more of a story to tell with Susan joining the Time War?
I hadn't really thought about it at all, if I'm honest. I wish I could say right from the off it was intended as a kind of soft pilot, but it really wasn't. It was just a short trip. But then when I started reading the reviews, I seemed to be the only person who hadn't looked at it as a deliberate leaping off point. But Big Finish had already got sort of several Time War series going, so I didn't really pursue it. I think because I'd seen some of the reviews just that day, I sort of evolved a quick pitch and put it out to Nick and David and Jason and said, well, actually, what about Susan's War as a vehicle for Carol Ann, and then actually have her front and center, make it very different to the existing Time War stories, and basically give her her own series. And very quickly they came back saying, oh, that's a good idea. I suggested four writers. The first one was going to be Eddie. I'd wanted the first story to be on the Sensphere with the Sensorites, but that initially was nixed because no one knew who held the rights. And I was able to get in touch with Toby Haydock, who recently interviewed the family of the writer of Sensorites. And very quickly we were in touch with, I think, the daughter who owned all the rights, and we'd sorted that out in the day. So it's, sometimes it's just, you ask a question no one else has thought to ask and you get the right answer. So we'd sorted that out. And I'd spoken to Eddie about doing that first story and giving a bit of shape to the whole idea. And he came back with the storyline, which we really liked. But in the meantime, as that was bubbling along, I was increasingly wanting to leave Big Finish. And when I left, I think most of the things I'd produced, I'd finished, and we'd seen recording, and it was just a question of them releasing. But with Susan's War, I left my notes sort of behind and said, look, please don't let this go, because I think it's a really lovely idea. And I think it's really different. And off I went. And didn't hear anything for quite some time after that. And I just assumed it had been dropped as an idea. Then I think Lisa Bowerman got in touch to say, oh, did you know it was kind of back on? And I didn't. It also would have been the first full cast production I'd ever done, which I'd been itching to do for years, but you make the wrong call sometimes, hey?
Well, Ian, thank you very much for that insight, and thoroughly enjoyed you being back with us once again on Pieces of Eight.
No, not at all. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll speak with you again soon.
Take care.
I love hearing from Ian about his thought process and commissioning scripts and why. And I absolutely loved his way of bringing the Time War to the classic era, but in a really subtle way.
It is. It's very subtle, and I enjoy it, because apart from, obviously, the 50th, I don't know that much about the Time War. Or I did. Yeah. I did that, but I didn't.
Yes. I think because it's been hinted at in subtle things, we hear things like the nightmare of the Nightmare Child and Davros and the...
Yeah.
And the cruciform,
and
yeah, but we don't actually get to see it, so it's very interesting just to hear how the Time Lords are sort of getting their own war force together, which we hear in this, and I think it's fascinating just the lengths to which they'll go to by recruiting all Time Lords from all places, even someone like Susan, who's been away from home for a long time.
Yeah, so is Susan actually Gallifreyan?
Yes, she is a Time Lord, yes.
So although, where did she come from?
Oh, she was there, I mean... We saw Susan on screen with Hartnell at the start of one of the Matt Smith episodes. I think it's the name of the Doctor. And it's got them escaping in the TARDIS. We've got a bit of old footage. And then Clara shows up.
Yes.
That's who Susan is. That was an obscene appearance on screen. But it's never implied that that's who she is, that she's the Doctor's granddaughter. I mean, there was a load of speculation in the 80s that then producer John Nathan Turner didn't like the idea of the Doctor having a granddaughter, as he thought that would imply there was been some hanky-panky involving the Doctor, and he didn't think that should happen. And there was a story published in the 1983 Radio Times special where Susan's real name was in fact the Lady Larne and had been smuggled away from Gallifrey. But that was just a bit of nonsense. I don't take it as canonical, and I think that Susan is definitely the Doctor's granddaughter, as we know now that the Doctor and other Time Lords enjoy kissing and other things.
They like dancing, I heard.
Oh yes, they can't beat a bit of dancing. Definitely. A bit of dancing always goes down well. Bit of a fan of dancing myself, but there we go.
I've heard. Anyway, without further ado, let's hear from the man who wrote said short trip, Eddie Robson.
Hello, I'm Eddie Robson, and I wrote All Hands on Deck.
Firstly, Eddie, welcome to Pieces of Eight.
Thank you. It's good. Thank you for having me on.
Can you tell us what you remember about Paul McGann being cast as the Doctor?
Oh, yeah. I mean, funnily enough, it was... Yeah, I only remember just getting getting it on Doctor Who magazine and getting the one where he's got short hair on the cover and he's sort of holding... What is it that he's holding on the front? Some sort of glowy crystal thing.
Yeah, I don't know if it's meant to be the key to time or not. It's very bizarre.
No, no, it's just one of those. It's just one of those press shot things that they do with Doctor Who. It's like, here, stand somewhere spacey and hold something weird. And weirdly, I remember the whole TV movie thing was coming out of the blue. And then whenever I look back over old Doctor Who magazines from that period, I went, oh yeah, they were just reporting on this the whole time. And I just, I don't know, I didn't believe it was ever really going to happen. So I just went, yeah, whatever. And so, yeah, and he was, I think he did come up before then, but I'd realised. But yeah, he definitely seemed right. It was, not only that it was exciting that it was happening, but also that... And it, just because we'd had years of really terrible rumours, you know, all that stuff saying, oh, they're going to do an American one and they'll cast Sylvester Stallone as the Doctor and all that sort of thing. And suddenly, it, you know, they announced it and it was Paul McGann and you thought, oh, right, that actually looks right. That looks good. It looks like they've got the right idea here.
What do you recall of the first time you saw the movie? Were you a midnight HMV opening person or did you just wait for the TV transmission?
I don't think our HMV opened at midnight, and if it had, I mean, I would have been 17 when it came out, so I wouldn't have gone in to get it. I mean, actually, yeah, the buses would have stopped by then. Like, the last bus home to my village went at about 10:30. But I was in sixth form, and we did. I don't think we exactly bunked off, but I think you technically weren't meant to go off school property if you had a free period. But me and my friend Andy, who was also a Doctor Who fan and lived a lot closer to the school than I did, yeah, we just nipped out at lunch, at break time, and went and bought the video and just went straight back to his house and watched it and got back to school for the end of lunch. And yeah, it was really exciting. Actually, I remember that we did all that, but I don't really remember anything else about the viewing of it. It was one of those things where I think it was just so exciting it went by in a bit of a blur.
So skipping forward, you've written for Paul McGann as the Eighth Doctor several times for Big Finish.
Yeah.
By the time the commission for All Hands on Deck came round, what do you recall of getting the commission for it? What was in the brief from Ian Atkins, as you recall?
I think, as I remember, he wanted a Susan one. I can't even remember whether... No, I think it was specifically... You know, I'm trying to remember whether he specified a Doctor that had to be in it. I think there was, by that stage, there was an established relationship between Susan and the Eighth Doctor because she'd come back in was it Mark Platt's story? There was the one, yeah, there was definitely in the Eighth Doctor Adventures. So at the time with Big Finish and with Carol, it was sort of, that was sort of the relationship that we'd established for the older Susan. So I think it would have always been Eighth Doctor, but I think apart from that, it was quite loose, really. I don't think he really gave me a big brief.
How did you find writing this one, given that the Doctor's presence is there throughout the whole story without him actually being there?
Yeah, I sort of didn't mind that much because I felt Susan was a very interesting character in her own right. I felt like I could have just... I felt I didn't necessarily even need to have the Doctor in it for it to work and for me to be able to, yeah, anchor it dramatically. So I didn't worry too much about that. And it was actually... sometimes it's quite nice, and something that you do get with these short trips is because you are usually taking a different character's perspective. You don't feel like you have to necessarily... have the Doctor in it from the start, and I think it could be quite fun to kind of see the hints of his presence well before he actually appears.
It's quite understandable that the Doctor would want to keep his granddaughter away from the Time Warp.
Yeah.
But how did you find writing for Susan?
Well, it was, I mean, one thing was that, like, when I started, I was sort of thinking, okay, so where do we find her in her life at this point? And, you know, just by this point, she's such a different character from the one that we saw on TV anyway. But, yeah, I mean, Big Finish really put her through the ringer, I have to say. I mean, one thing is that, actually, yeah, one thing that really struck me was that because in To the Death, you know, we had the Earth invaded by the Daleks again, and that made me think it must be a bit like people who were about the right age to have been really like teenagers in the late teens when World War One happened, and then, you know, in the late 30s when World War Two happened, just kind of seeing two such brutal conflicts in quick succession. And I just thought, yeah, it must, and you know, we've had so many people close to her die. And I think that was kind of my starting point, was that by the time we meet her, she doesn't really, she's struggling to make friends really, because I think that that does happen, like the older you get, the more difficult it is to make new friends. And she's just sort of been through so much that she's just not really inclined to do that. She's not really, it all seems like, to her, it all seems like a lot of effort to build anything new in her life, because things keep getting torn down.
I think it's a very vivid script, very easy to visualise, and I think it's beautifully painted in. So what was your personal highlight from writing it? Did you have any favourite moments? And how did you enjoy hearing Carol Ann performing the finished version?
In terms of highlights, I mean, what I always had in mind, actually, while we've been talking, I've just been looking back through my emails, and I've seen that, yeah, Ian did say, can we have Susan meeting the Eighth Doctor again? But the thing that I'd always thought of in that was, it was always going to be about like kind of the moment of her making that choice, and just, I thought it was just interesting to have, like, you know, it's different, her choice is different from the Doctor's, and it's coloured from her own experience, as I say, from having fought in these wars and the fact that she's been personally affected by the Daleks repeatedly. I mean, it all really came from the fact that I can see why, for simplicity's sake, and like the dramatic cleanness, when we saw the Doctor post Time War, you know, we have the whole bit in Dalek where he says, "Oh, I just know there's no one left. I can tell." And yeah, you know, it would have massively complicated things dramatically to have said, "Oh yes, and I do have a granddaughter." But it always made me think, okay, so where are these other Gallifreyan characters who we've met, and what has happened to Susan? And I just thought, actually, I mean, in my head, I was sort of tying that off. I was sort of, this would be chronologically the final Susan story. Like, people could obviously go back and do other stories with her before, but I'd thought, well, this is kind of the end of her story. And I don't think I realised, actually, until it got, I think it might have been Ian who said, oh, it sort of parallels her departure in the first place, because the Doctor makes the decision for her back then. And he said, look, this is what's happening again. He's trying to make the decision for her again that she will not fight. And this time she takes the initiative and she says, no, I'm going to make this choice for myself, which wasn't something that I'd seen. But when I saw that, I thought, oh, that makes it even better. That's a really a neat thing to do. So, yeah, and it was just great to hear Carol Ann read it. And something that I felt like, you know, it's nice to give people something that where hopefully they can kind of connect that to the character that they've played for so long, and, you know, the changes that they've had in their own lives since then. But at the time, I never considered that it might be, and lots of people said, oh, it's obviously trying to set up a new series, and that honestly hadn't occurred to me when I wrote it. I mean, in fact, because I didn't even know, when I pitched it, I did say, I don't know whether we'll be allowed to do this, because being able to touch Time War stuff was still relatively new, and you never know what they might say, oh, actually, no, don't touch that, because we might want to use that at some point. So I certainly didn't think, oh, yeah, we could get a whole series out of this. I was just considering it quite lucky that we even got to do one.
The story got a fantastic reception upon its release. That must have been really satisfying for you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, definitely. But it was once I kind of had the idea of doing it, and like I say, it's something that had been ticking away at the back of my mind for a long time, that the not necessarily the story, but the idea of, like, what happened to Susan? Where is she now? But once I kind of saw the opening to do it, I was like, oh, I really wanted to leap on that, because it's inherently a significant story, and you can't really, yeah, it's not one that you can do again, and because it ties into certain things. So I think once I'd secured the permission to do that story, it was just a matter of trying to do it well, tell that story well, really. And I think it turned out okay. I mean, one thing that I kind of decided on was because of the nature of what the Doctor's doing, that it doesn't really matter what the problems that she has to solve are, the ones because they're just to get her out of the house. I tried to kind of infect them with this sort of Doctorish flavour, which hopefully I think that was one of the things that was quite satisfying about it, was that it does all seem quite sort of knockabout and inconsequential, but then you sort of have that shift at the end when you realise why he's been doing all this, which I think is what people responded to.
Most definitely. I loved it. I mean, it's just such a great story, and the fact that, as you mentioned earlier, that it did manage to get not just a sequel, but actually a full cast spin-off series in the form of Susan's War, that must have been so pleasing for you.
Yeah, it really was. It was, like I say, I didn't think of it at the time. I thought I was just writing a one-off story, but then I think they just realised that it was a good... Yeah, that sort of actually this is a good angle on the Time War. You've got Carol Ann, who's available to play Susan. She's an interesting character to do that with. It's something interesting to give her to do, something new that she can do, and carries it off in another direction. And I did find, actually, that when I was writing the first Susan's War, in which she has to try and get the Sensorites involved, when I was looking at the Time War from her perspective and particularly from Ian's perspective, as characters who'd kind of been out of Doctor Who and then like bringing them back in at the point of the Time War, it's because of the way Russell reset things to an extent and kind of went back to basics with the concept of Doctor Who, it sort of all does feel it works because you're bringing them back to a point when there hadn't been loads of universe invading monsters introduced to the series, and so the ones who do that are the Daleks. It felt quite natural having Ian stepping back into this situation and going, well, of course the Daleks are the worst creature in the universe. And it was funny how like that sort of season 1 1963 and series 1 2005 actually meshed surprisingly well.
Eddie, thank you so much for joining us on Pieces of Eighth today, and hopefully we will speak to you again very soon.
Okay, thanks.
Yay, good old Eddie.
Listeners, if you want updates on our latest episodes and other things we've been up to, plus other 8th Doctor news and rarities and silliness, remember to follow us on Twitter, where we're at Pieces of 8th, with 8th written out as a full word rather than a number with TH at the end.
That's all we've got time for this week, and we'll be back next week when we feature The Body Snatchers, the third 8th Doctor adventure, which was published by BBC Books way back in 1997.
I was just 2.5 when it was released.
Stop being so young.
I don't have a TARDIS. I can't change it.
No, you can't change history, not one single line. Anyway.
Our thanks once again to Ian and Eddie for their time. And until next time, thank you for joining us. And we'll see you in 7 days' time. Unless you're binging and listening to our episodes back to back, in which case we'll see you in a minute. Bye.
Bye-bye.